On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who chairs the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. It's a group of 32 members who met regularly in public meetings for nearly a year. They're out with a 120-page report, 55 recommendations intended to help Wisconsin mitigate the effects of climate change. Have you seen the report? What do you think? What should be acted on? Where do you see potential obstacles? Have you seen the effects of climate change in your area? We're at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on to have a moment to talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, you met for about a year through a lot of different issues, a lot of different environmental, certainly a lot of different natural disasters even during this time. How did you see the task force approach this work of this plan?
So we approached it using science. That was the bare minimum that, you know, we should have been doing this work a long time ago. We were doing this work a long time ago, I should add. Former Governor Doyle did have a task force on climate change. Some people may remember, some may not. But unfortunately, all that work went away for 8 years after Governor Doyle left office. So we let science guide our decision making. And we want to have a specific emphasis on environmental justice, because it was important for people to recognize the harm that is done to communities because as a result of climate change. This happens in low-income communities, predominantly communities of color, rural communities, urban and suburban communities alike. But the fact is, there are people who contribute to climate change who get away with a whole lot. And leaving these communities, leaving these families, leaving these neighborhoods to, again, deal with those devastating impacts from an economic perspective and also from a health perspective.
Your task force encouraged the creation of the Office of Environmental Justice. What would this office do?
This would be an office that looks at certain environmental hazards, specifically water contamination, air quality issues, what decision making for certain operations and whether it's industry and agriculture and whether you're talking about manufacturing, whatever the case may be, we need to take a hard look at the impact that will be felt by large scale operations. And also, I hope that this office will steer us in the decision of a better decision making. When we put up new buildings, what is going to be the harm to the planet? But how can we also benefit families? How do we make sure that we are building the most efficient buildings that are that meet certain standards, that keep in mind the health and safety, especially of our children and other vulnerable populations? As we see, that becomes more of an issue as COVID-19 gains in prevalence across the state and across this country. You know, we have a vaccine on the way, but we're still going to have a few rough months ahead of us. And I think that this is putting us in a position as states to reexamine public health, and environmental issues are public health issues.
And I want to ask you about vaccine rollout here just a bit later. But, some of the functions here about clean air and clean water, they happen under the umbrella of the DNR. How would this office be different from what is happening within that DNR state agency?
Some do, but this is more specifically focused on those issues of environmental justice and injustice. I think that we need to make sure that we are better in consultation with our tribal partners. I think that we should be better when it comes to environmental remediation. You know, DNR can do so much, but I think that we have room to cast a much wider net with this Office of Environmental Justice. And I'll say that we'd be no different than other states. Honestly, this is one of the least novel parts about the task force report. We may be the only state besides Indiana. I'm not sure about Ohio, but all other Great Lakes states have an Office of Environmental Justice.
How did your task force work with our state's tribal communities on the climate change strategies?
Oh, we had members of tribal communities on the task force who were members just like any other interest group, any other stakeholder, any other partner in this sort of work. as they have been and will continue to be.
We're talking with Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor of our state, Chair of the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change, which released its strategies last week. You can join in with your questions about the climate crisis in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, what was the task force, you know, determination to be the best way to create green jobs in our state? What is the vision?
Yeah, so there are a number of paths, one being the Green Grant Program from that will be administered through WEDC, which provides startup funding to help people get off the ground who want to get involved in renewable energy. And that's going to be key for us. There's also a worker retraining program because, you know, we are going to need a workforce to get this done. And the thing about Wisconsin, which is an argument that's used in states like Pennsylvania or even Ohio, possibly even Indiana a little bit more, is, you know, people are going to be losing out who are working in the fossil fuel industry. Well, fortunately, or unfortunately, whatever, however you want to look at it, we don't have that many jobs in the fossil fuel industry. And so the reason I would say unfortunately is because there's not a lot that's holding us back. We are just spending, you know, boatloads of money every year as consumers, as a state, to generate energy
although,
from sources.
Although coal is a major driver in our state of energy.
Coal is produced, but we don't have, there aren't a bunch of coal jobs here in Wisconsin.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. I thank you for highlighting that because we get so much of our energy from coal production. That coal is not here in Wisconsin, but we do have wind that can produce energy here in Wisconsin. And today is not the best example, but sun is also an energy source that can be used here in the state of Wisconsin. We can look to the west in Iowa. We can even look to Minnesota, and their share of energy that comes from renewable energy sources puts us to shame. And Iowa, they've gone all in on wind energy. You know, this is an opportunity for Wisconsin to just catch up to the states that are around us. But I think that we have to do much better than that because we were on a path to do much better than that some time ago. But again, for the green jobs portion, there's a transition piece, there's a grant piece, there's also support for, you know, our tech colleges. They've done an incredible job already with some of their programs around solar already. I had a chance to tour two different schools last year. Got to see a solar program in action, got to see a wind program in action.
So on the solar projects, on new solar projects, are the infrastructure for those projects currently being built mostly out of state with out of state workers? What does the labor force look like?
Well, labor force, fortunately, we do have a lot of that is here, and a lot of it is also unionized. I went to a solar installation just outside of Green Bay with a group of nuns, and you know, they're the group that I can't think of the company actually, but they were IBEW. So here we have an opportunity to create good paying union jobs to make the state of Wisconsin the way that we used to be, strong and full of opportunity for people to get ahead in different industries. And I want to remind people that, you know, we have a hard work ethic in Wisconsin, and we also have a maker's ethic. We have an ethic of, you know, we have a history of manufacturing. And I want to remind people that even less so than the workforce, I think the workforce component isn't the problem of having people from out of state coming to fill those jobs. I think that we need more opportunities to employ the people who are already here. But I do want to remind people that not a whole lot of these solar panels and wind turbines are made in the USA, much less the state of Wisconsin. So that is an opportunity for us to get back to our manufacturing roots, to be able to not just produce energy here, but produce the machinery that produces the energy.
Lieutenant Governor, this 120-page plan, it doesn't include specific funding projections. Why is that?
That's right. I want to leave the door open there. And the thing is, there are a lot of people who would like to use certain numbers as a cudgel. They would like to use those numbers to beat us over the head and say, oh, this is very unrealistic. But the most unrealistic thing is the amount of money that we're going to continue to spend if we don't get a grip on climate change, because we are already spending that money to repair damaged infrastructure. Insurance companies are already paying out large sums of money for homes that are affected. And in the worst instances, people don't get their insurance claims accepted. And I'll remind people that, you know, we actually had insurance companies on the task force because this is an issue for them as well. We have been paying out, you know, a lot of money. People's lives and livelihoods are being disrupted in real time. And so in order for us to avoid unnecessary arguments, I mean, we'll cross the bridges when we get there. But the reason why there isn't specific funding, because a lot of this stuff is flexible also.
When you look specifically at the flooding that has happened over the last few years, northern Wisconsin experiencing 3 once-in-a-lifetime storms in a decade, what can the state do to help communities likely to see future flooding and more of it?
Yeah, so we need to adapt more mitigation strategies, you know, because I'm not going to sit here and sell anyone a bill of goods. You know, this task force report isn't going to solve climate change in 1 year. It's not going to solve it in 3 years. It took a while for us to get here, but we can absolutely do the work right now to get us out of it, because things can get worse and we need to make sure that things are not worse for the next generation. But until then, I think that we could adopt more strategies to prevent flooding, or at least lessen the impact. That means protecting our wetlands. It means making sure that we are smart about the way and the location where we are rebuilding these roads, where we are building these bridges. And we need to look at the science and figure out, does it make sense for us to build in certain places? I mean, I can look to Houston, Texas, which was a perfect example a couple years ago when they had the historic flood in there as a result of overdevelopment. Too much.
And we have to pause there with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. He chaired the governor's task force on climate change. It's a 32-member group. Governor Evers ordered the formation of this task force to analyze our state's climate crisis back in October of 2019. And the task force just published its 120-page report. Lieutenant Governor, let's look at farming here for a moment. Farmers are dealing with the impacts of climate change, flooding, heat waves. Some agricultural practices have threatened our groundwater in parts of the state. How did you factor farmers in during this plan, during this process?
Oh, we actually, so our DACAP secretary was a part of the task force. We had members from the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau as a part of the task force. And that was meaningful in and of itself, because sometimes the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union can be on opposite sides of the coin, regardless of the industry. And so we were able to have some very in-depth discussions. And I'll rewind to and say that one of the best parts about the task force for me was the fact that we had such varied perspective. So many people from different walks of life, people who, you know, may be on opposing sides of an issue, but haven't ever sat down to really have the conversations. And this made an opportunity. This created a path for those discussions to happen in person. And many times they did. And, you know, that's why we want to make sure that the work, or at least the task force, stays together in some sort of way afterwards. We can continue these conversations. We would hate for it all to go away just because of the formal work has been completed. But we had members from the agriculture community, because they often get blamed for, you know, emissions or, you know, bad practices. But the fact is, we need strong food systems here in the state. We need to be proud of our agricultural heritage here in the state. And we need to provide opportunities to our small family farmers especially. And so there are ways for us to not point the finger at our farm and operations, but make them a part of the solution. And I think it was very helpful for us to approach it in that way.
Well, along these lines and farming techniques, Terry and Alma called in, and Terry couldn't stay with us, but Terry wanted to know what you think of regenerative farming in the state and how that has been.
I'm all about it. I had the chance to visit a number of farms who use regenerative practices, using cover crops. And, we were on one farm last year, and, the guy was just telling us about, how their flooding had been an issue in the area, but the impact on his operation was much less than the impact on his neighbors, because he used practices that made sure that the soil was more adaptable to heavy rainfall. And, we want to be in a position, and that's also one of the recommendations, to help farmers to be able to adapt these sort of practices that help them out personally, individually, but also help out the broader community, and to also help promote these sorts of practices to other farmers who may be a little bit more hesitant to switch it up. And so I'm very excited about the opportunities that we have with the promotion of regenerative practices in farming.
I want to take a look here now at transportation. Transportation and the electricity make up nearly 60% of our state's greenhouse emissions. What does the task force want to achieve in the area of transportation?
Well, in the area of transportation, we want to make sure that we have infrastructure for electric vehicles. This will be the way of the future. Car companies are moving in that direction anyway, and it would be a shame for Wisconsin to be left behind. And a lot of the hesitance people have when it comes to electric vehicles is, the distance fatigue, wondering if their car is going to make it the full trip, which is completely understandable. So we want to make sure that we have, whether it's EV corridors across the state or just more areas for people to have a chance to charge their vehicles, so that we can get higher emitting vehicles off the road as soon as possible. And also public transportation is going to be a big deal. And even non-vehicle transportation, we have complete streets in there as well as a part of the recommendations. I remind you that the last administration was the first, maybe still only, state to get rid of complete streets funding, which makes sure that when we plan communities, when we plan transportation, that we have safe walkable routes, options for bikes as well. And that just helps also to get people off the road, and also helps to build community, because people get outside and not just get in a car and get out the car, but are spending time getting to know their neighbors, spending time, on their feet. And this has a positive health impact as well.
We are breaking down the recommendations from the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change with its chair. We have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. You can join in on the climate crisis, what you see in this plan, 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, where does this plan go from here? Where does the task force go from here?
Yep. So the plan from here, we hope to see some recommendations come up in the budget. We hope to see some things come up in separate legislation as well. I'll remind you that we had bipartisan membership on the task force from the legislature. And, we are going to explore, or in the task force, I should say, it shows which things can be done through the agencies as well. And so the blueprint, the roadmap is basically laid out for which direction would be the best route for those suggestions, for those solutions. And
what what task force recommendations specifically require action by the legislature?
Well, some of it, if you comb through it, almost anything could be done through the legislature.
Subject
right?
to, but, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. Almost anything, as we have seen, as the legislature has wanted to, be as involved, I'll say, in governing when it comes to certain things, we hope that this is something that is taken seriously and something that it does not turn into a dogfight, because it should not. But I do feel that there are a number of opportunities for the legislature to act on certain things. But if not, there are some options that are available for executive action or through rulemaking. For the future of the task force, I do hope that in some way we'll see the members still come together as more of a council, not necessarily task force, because the formal work has been completed.
You worked a lot together. You know each other.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you anticipate any pushback from the business community or industries that these climate change strategies affect?
I mean, there will always be some pushback, but that's another thing we did, too. We tried to dot all of our I's and cross all of our T's. We had small businesses represented. We had large businesses represented. We had utility companies on the task force. Again, we had insurance companies on the task force. We had Native communities represented. We had students. We had environmental advocates, especially. And so I do, sure, maybe there'll be pushback somewhere, but there is far more opportunities for us to work together.
Well, I want to jump in here and bring in Becky now. Hi, Becky. We're short on time. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering, in our town, outside of the town in Elroy, they spent like a whole year putting up all kinds of solar panels along the hillside, but they've never been put into use. And I'm wondering, you know, I think the government had some help in putting them up, but they're not being used. And I don't understand why.
Any idea there, Lieutenant Governor?
No. Wait, when were those put up?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I cannot speak that, but I would love to figure that out. If you wouldn't mind sending something to my office at ltgov@wisconsin.gov.
We'll figure out what's happening with those solar panels. Well, Becky, thank you for calling. And Lieutenant Governor, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Mandela Burns, 45th Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, chairs the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change. By the way, we have a link to the climate change report at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we check in with two organ transplant physicians about how their work is affected by the pandemic. What questions do you have about organ donation, about organ procurement amid COVID? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.